that brings the wisdom at both levels, the theory as well as practice. And we have been studying the fifth chapter where Arjuna is being shown how following the path of yoga, you come to the knowledge, you come to the experience of one reality, you come to the experience that you have the eternal mine of bliss right within you, and thus the life becomes fulfilled, the life of beggary ends. Otherwise we are kind of beggars here. Without this self-realization, our life is begging, because we all seek pleasure, and since we do not find it within us, we seek it from other objects, you know. We keep on begging to them, that, oh man, give me a little pleasure, oh woman, give me some pleasure, oh chocolate, give me some pleasure. It is all, you know, it is the life of begging. But when you discover that all happiness is really within you, then this life of beggary is transformed into the life of freedom. Also, this eliminates all fear from life, because fear is because we feel we may lose something. We have something and we will lose something. Whatever possessions we have in this world, they are having this problem that we feel they can be snatched away from us. And therefore, we are scared always. Even the biggest fear, as we say, the fear of death, and that too is gone here because you experience that you are eternal, you are immortal. The death has no meaning for you at all. It is not that kind of daring that, yes, I can face death. Not that idea. You know that you have no death at all. It is like the person, suppose, sees a big tiger. Then most of us will be just scared. We won't go near. Tiger is a terrible thing. That Jim Corbett, one of the most celebrated hunters and students of wildlife, who spent lot of time in early 20th century, 1900-some, in dealing with the menace of man-eating tigers in that Himalayan region. And he writes about what happens if a person sees the tiger, and not the tiger caged in the zoo, you know, that is a different thing. And that you already know that it can't do you anything, or when you are sitting in a circus, that is a different thing. But in a forest, in the open, if you suddenly come to the tiger, then, and if you are not scared, then he says either you are completely dumb or you are God. Either of these. It is, no man can just be there and feel that terrible fear. So, most of us will be scared. But somebody like, say, our Vishwanath will say, no, I am not scared at all. I can deal with tiger. Come on, Swami, what do you think it is? What is there? Let me go ahead. So, there may be some daring person who would go to fight the tiger. But suppose a person and knows that it is a paper tiger, made of paper, United States administration used to call China as the paper tiger. And now that term is gone, but in early days of this, China is called paper tiger. Nothing to fear about that. And now we know what kind of tiger it is, but it is, if you know that it is a paper tiger, then you will have no fear at all. Not that kind of courage, oh, I can deal with tiger, what is there? Yeah, well, even if I die, I don't care. You know, it is paper, it is not going to eat you. It is not going to harm you. So, the sense of fear completely disappears, becomes meaningless. So similarly, this person, having seen the truth, completely goes beyond fear. There is nothing here to fear. And not that you muster courage to deal with it, but there is nothing to be afraid of here. So, we saw how when the knowledge enters, the life transforms. And now, that person is in this world, but doesn't get buffeted by the blows of the world, is neither attracted by certain pleasant things or repelled by unpleasant things, because he knows that they are just illusions. They come and go. That person is seeing like we see. Not that there is confusion that if he sees Charles, he will call that Charles as Vishwanath. No, he knows that those are the people. He recognizes them. His perceptions are similar to our perceptions. But the difference is, he sees that they are all manifestations of one reality. And Swami Vivekananda has narrated that in a beautiful way in his book Jnana Yoga. In some other places also he has narrated that experience when he was walking in those deserts of Rajasthan in India, and it was all sandy desert there. As he was walking in the noon times, some afternoon, and he thought that he needs to drink some water. And he saw that while walking, he was seeing some nice lakes around. So he thought that he can go towards one of the lakes and just drink some water, that will be fine. He was even thinking that there are so many nice lakes here, why people call it a desert? So, when he felt thirsty, he started walking towards one of the desert, one of those lakes in the desert. And as he was walking, he found that there is no such lake at all. It was the sand there appearing as water. There was no water at all. And then it struck him, this is what he had read in his school books as mirage, an optical illusion, that there is the sand but appears like water. We see that here also sometimes on some summer days, as we are driving, we feel, oh, why, there is so much of rain just right there. We don't have any rain here, wonderful. So, but as we drive there, we see there is no water there at all. It is a mirage. So now, he understood that and kept on walking. The scene remained the same. He was seeing the same lakes. But for him now, they were not lakes. That was just mirage. And therefore, he was not walking towards them to drink water. So, that is what happens to this person who sees the truth. He then doesn't crave for this object or that object, because he knows that there is no happiness to be found by grabbing them. It is, they do not contain any happiness. They are just appearances only. All happiness is within you. And therefore, it is said here that the bahyas, the 21st and 22nd verses, and they illustrate this thing that bahyas parisheshva saktatma. We saw these verses in the last class, that this person, he whose mind is unattached to the external objects of the senses, attains to the bliss that is in the self. He, with his mind identified with Brahman, through absorption in it, enjoys undecaying bliss. So, if we are going towards the some object to get happiness, then we are going away from the source of happiness, and therefore we end up in misery. And this misery or suffering is a great problem, a practical problem, problem in philosophy, problem in theology. The philosophers also struggle that why there is misery in this world. In theology, why God has put so much of suffering and injustice in the world? That becomes a big problem in theology. That if the God is just, then that just God should not have put so much of suffering in this world. So, if the God is compassionate, shouldn't have made people suffer so much. That some child dies suddenly, and then the question crops up in the mind, especially of those who are closely related to that child, say the mother of that child. Think of that, how much suffering. And the question she asks, what wrong did this child do? Why this child had to die? Where is justice in this world? So, these questions about suffering come in our life, and the solution is here, that why there is suffering? The suffering is because we had been thinking that all these objects around, they will bring happiness to us. And they do not. Instead, we get caught in them. That is called suffering. The suffering is because we get caught. And there is no happiness to be found there. There is only the trap. The trap that attracts you. And then you are caught in it. There is nothing to be happy about it. So one gets trapped. Everything around, those of you who would like to get more into this understanding can read Swami Vivekananda's book Jnana Yoga, the three chapters on Maya. The third chapter, third, fourth and fifth, these three chapters very beautifully and very strong language, emphatic words, he has described how we all get into this trap. And we can't help it actually, because we perceive that there is happiness there. And so because of that perception, I am kind of compelled to go there and then get trapped. So what is the solution? To understand that the happiness is here, not there. You have to change the perspective, change the life in that way. It is like when you know that you are driving in wrong direction, then you immediately try to see how you can take a U-turn or take another exit and come in the right direction and keep on going towards where you want to go. So when you learn that you want happiness, when you learn that you want happiness, this all of us know. Is there anyone here who says, I don't want happiness? Everybody says, no, I want happiness. And if you see that happiness is not in those objects, what will happen? Your craving, will stop for those objects. You are running towards those objects for happiness, that also will stop, and you will turn towards the source of happiness. So that is Atmani Yat Sukham. It is said here that happiness this person discovers, Atmani means here, not there. And so the life then gets centered around it. And this next verse has described that this person sees now that all those external objects, they are traps. So doesn't get involved in them, does not indulge in them, because knows, you know, that they are traps. Once you know that it is trap, then even though there is temptation, you resist the temptation. I don't want it. Like one of our little friends, you know, that little girl knows that if she eats nuts, she gets allergies. So even though she is very little, makes it sure that she won't be eating anything like that has nuts. Has it got nuts? She likes many things, though there is temptation, but she knows the result. If there are nuts, then she will suffer for that. And that memory of that suffering, she might have had sometimes some peanut or some, and then has created lot of rash, lot of suffering, itching and so forth. And that memory of that suffering now tells her, no, although it is attractive, don't go there, don't eat it. So even though she is so little, she asks those questions always, is there nuts, some nuts in it? So it is like that. We ask that, is there something that will trap me there? If that is going to be the case, although it is very attractive, I don't want it. I don't want to get into that trap. And then keep on repenting how to get out of the trap. You know, we are trapped, and then keep on looking for the way to get out of the trap. It is important, therefore, that while we will strive to get out of this trap, we should at least now be careful not to get into more and more traps. So, it is said that the wise person does not, therefore, indulge in these things. And then in the next verse, the 23rd verse of 5th chapter, he says, Shaknoti ihaivaya sudhum praksharira vimokshanat kama krodhodbhavam vegam sayuktah sasukhi narah. He, of course, it includes she also. In Sanskrit, it is, although it is yah, means it is masculine, but it includes all genders there. He who is able to withstand the urge arising from passion and anger in this very life, before the fall of the body, is a poised and happy man. It shows how we should direct our life now. That yes, there are all those attracting things, because although we have learned from Bhagavad Gita that there is no happiness, still there are those past impressions, past momentums, which keep on dragging us. And that is a kind of urge. In psychology, in Western psychology, they divide the drag, the different types of desires are classified. Like there is a desire, there is a drag, and there is an urge. All three, the different levels are there. A desire is something that you can think of and discriminate and get rid of. There is something that is a drag, where it is not that easy. It is, you are kind of bound, although you want to get away, like somebody is dragging you. You know, it is, in the case of desire, the attraction, repulsion is not that strong. In case of drag, you feel the tremendous pull. You feel kind of helpless, like you are tied and somebody is dragging you. So, it is a big pressure there. Urge is something very spontaneous. You do not even have the freedom to think. In case of drag, at least you know that you are being dragged and you want to get away. In case of urge, it is so powerful and so spontaneous that it just happens. You say that it just happened. It is. I was just helpless about it. I even didn't realize it at that time. I became conscious of it only after I got caught. I didn't even know beforehand that I had the desire. I didn't have even time to ponder over it. I did not even feel that sense of dragging. But it's happened. Many these things that such drags, and that results in what is called progressively compulsive behavior, that disorder. That if there is a desire, it is not that compulsive. A person can resist that. A drag is kind of a more compulsive behavior. Unless you break away from that, it is difficult. But you have that feeling that you are getting dragged. The behavior is compulsive, but at least you are aware of it. In some other case, it is so compulsive. You have no control over it, whatever. Even no knowledge of it, whatever. It just happened. You just do not have even the thought. So this kind of compulsive behavior takes place, and you get then caught. You have no way now what to do with it. But this is how this has happened, because of repeated actions. It was first a desire. Then you acted on that desire. Then it went on getting solidified, and then it formed what is it called? Shortcut, you know. It formed a shortcut that whatever programs in computer and you access very often, then you create a shortcut for that, you know. So you don't have to go through the process of particular drive, this document, then go. You don't have to open all that. You create a shortcut right on the desktop or somewhere, so as soon as you open, it is right there and you open it. So, because of the repeated action, a shortcut has been formed there. And so it instantaneously opens before you. But that has happened because of this. You have created that shortcut there. It is not that it is dictating, it is now it is compulsive for you, but doesn't mean that it was always compulsive for you. It is, you have to see how those desires get converted into drags get converted into these urges. When it becomes urge, we feel powerless against it. But not that there is no way to control or to go against it. You have to, just as you got tied up, you can get free also in the same way, that you have to work against it. After, you see the after effect, and then therefore you know that you get caught, you get dragged, you lose all your freedom, and therefore you take adequate measures to avoid those things. And first of all, it begins with a conviction in our true nature and a determination that yes, I want to achieve this freedom in life. I do not want to become slaves to these objects which compel me to get just driven to them. This has to be learned, friends. It is a training that we have to give. In the psychology is not just about finding out the cause, but finding out the remedy too. That kind of, medical science is not of much use, where they tell you that that the reason for the disease, what is its name, and they will do nice diagnosis that this is the disease, this is they call this, and this happens because of these germs or microbes and all that, and there is no remedy for it. Then even if you know all this, practically there is no use for it. But that psychological science, where you are not only shown that it is an urge, and many psychology books in the Western this thing therefore say that there is nothing you can do about it. Just don't try to resist them. Don't try to stop that. It is otherwise it will create complexes in life. So essentially lead a slavish life. When you call it natural, then you can't do anything. Natural means, you know, as if natural means good. Sometimes it gets converted into that, you know, that something is natural means something is right. Friends, let us remove this confusion. Natural doesn't mean it is right. It is sometimes you may therefore, as Swamiji said, some person can say that to steal is natural for somebody, that it is a drag, it is a desire, compulsive, there is this disorder with many. I know some people, a few persons I know who have, it is very difficult to control their compulsive that behavior of stealing. It is one lady I knew, her husband used to have such problem, because wherever they would go, if she sees something, she would put into the bag. That stealing has become such a compulsion with her that there was absolutely nothing that could be done. And then the husband had to keep a watch and then return all those things to the owner sometimes, and with apology that this is what happens. This is the sickness. But it has to be understood as sickness. Something just, if you justify it as natural, then it is difficult. For certain people, to murder somebody may be natural. Do you mean it should be justified? It is natural is one thing, that it has happened to you, but that doesn't mean that it is good. It is natural, yeah, but that doesn't mean that it is right or it is good. These two things are completely different. In fact, this is again Swami Vivekananda has spoken about many times, that all human progress is a struggle against nature. And not by towing the line of nature, but struggling against nature that we progress. All evolution is struggle against nature. It is the nature tries to suppress you. You assert, no, I want to grow. I want to survive. Nature doesn't make buildings for you. And nature tells you that just live in the cave or tree. No, and just eat whatever you see. Nature didn't teach you to cook. You invented, you acted against nature, learn to cook. You invented fire and how to ignite the fire, working against nature. It is all growth, all progress comes by working against nature. Now, most of you who have studied some little physics know that there is thermodynamics. And nature means disintegration, and nature means all disorganization. And the second law of thermodynamics, as they say, what happens naturally, everything tends to create more disorder, that's all. That is how the things tend to be naturally. But it is the life that tends to create order by struggling against it. In fact, the great physicist Erwin Schrödinger has written a beautiful book, What is Life? And that in that book, he gives this as a definition of life, you know, that the life feeds on entropy. Means it generates against the nature. Nature is increasing entropy. Life eats this entropy and generates order. Living means struggling against nature. And therefore, let us not just say that, well, this is just natural and justify it. It may be natural. Then you are becoming a prisoner is also natural. There is no escape from this prison. People say that this psychotherapists and such Western ideas about that, let them, give them free vent to all these natural propensities, so that what will happen, otherwise they will create complexes. As if giving free vent to all those do not create complexes. They create worse complexes, that's all. It is, a complex means what? Any action that you perform leaves an impression. And that impression is called complex. Impression in the sense you are prone to commit that action again and again. That is how habits get formed. You perform an action once, that will leave the seed. It gets microprocessed. The outer form of it disappears. The seed is left behind. That seed has the propensity to sprout. So it again makes you do it. Again it leaves seeds. Till now, it becomes a very compulsive behavior in your life. So how to tackle it? First of all, don't say that, no, it is natural, it is good, this is what my life is, and I should not try to control it, I should not try to govern it. If one says like that, then, well, friends, bondage is the result. The criminal society is the result. Imagine, friends, that everybody is just doing whatever that thought arises, not even thought. If we just give free vent to all the urges, and just think, you know, what will be the society? It will be just destruction. At one place Vivekananda therefore says that by pronouncing such ideas, what are we doing? We are increasing criminals in the society and increasing police force to control that crime more and more. See the ideas, how we feel that education will control the crime. No, friends, this training alone can control the crime. Recently we know in that Alabama there, a very highly educated, she got some prize for her research work. She goes and shoots three of her colleagues for not getting some tenure or something. So natural, you know, it is all natural. Give vent to natural urges, and this becomes the result. The crime cannot be controlled unless we give training to our mind. It is that don't get into these traps. Behavior is like that people try to justify. Oh, I am just, it is me, that's all. It is me means, should it be allowed? Why? What will be the result? Even at a social level, that it is a very harmful thing that the idea that was somehow either Freud himself propagated it, or in the name of Freud, there is a controversy about it. I don't want to go into it. But it is a very destructive conclusion that is drawn from that. That so give vent to all your those urges, and then you will be a happy person. You will not have any health problems. Is it true? Give vent to all your urges. That will land you in different diseases, that's all. Worse diseases, worse psychotic cases, and all that. Is it not a disease, compulsive behavior? It is a big disease. You are not in control of your faculties at all. You are not sure what will you do next moment. There is no character there. That is the definition of this word, character. And character means you know that how this person will respond in the face of these situations. And the test of the good character is that this person will retain the integrity in spite of the different situations that face that person. So, why do we value character so much in society, in individual and family life? Because that is where the glory of life is, struggling against the nature. It is a very important factor, friends. If we want to be happy, the solution is not to succumb, but to stand and fight. Not to become slave, but to struggle for freedom. That drag is pulling me, but I will stand firm. I will try my best. At least I will not support. It is not that everybody will find it equally simple. Depends on how hard, how fast we are tied by these drags. One can at least say that it is no, I will try to struggle against it. I am powerless right now, but I want to still struggle against it. I want freedom. We all want freedom, friends. and yet do exactly that which is going to take away freedom from us. See, whenever it is a very important thing to understand that whenever I take any pleasure from any object, I don't get pleasure, but to that extent I get bound by that object. That is what is happening. I try to get a little pleasure from eating chili. Now the objects of pleasure are different for different people. For somebody it may be a candy, for somebody it may be Super Bowl, for somebody it may be just eating the hot chili. So, but whatever that you try to get pleasure from there, you get caught in it. You then again and again start seeking it. That is how the life becomes now so many ropes tied around you. We want freedom, so we have to stand up and start struggle. Without struggle, you don't get freedom. Even for political freedom, how much struggle people had to do, it didn't come automatically. So, this is something that requires much more intense, determined perseverance is required, because it is a long-drawn struggle. Not that it will be over in just a minute. It can be. But if it doesn't, we need to go on struggling for a long, long time. So this is what is said in this, that if we want to be happy, that it says, he is poised and happy man in the translation of the 23rd verse. The last verse are, sa yukta sa sukhi naraha. Such a person is yogi and such a person is happy. So they are connected, you know. If you want to become happy, then you have to become yogi. Not just by name, you know, there are some greeters just they have the name yogi. So, yogi, it is good to have that name. It reminds you, you know, that you have to become like that. You know, you have to justify your name. Your actions should justify your name. That is why children, people are given nice good names, so that their name will remind them that what should they be doing. So that is why I was told I am given the name Yogatmananda. That at least my name will remind me what I should be doing, if not other things, because we are fond of ourselves, you know. I am so and so. Hey, then remember you are so and so. Do like that. It is you are Yogatmananda, not Bhogatmananda. Bhogatmananda is opposite of that, you know. Running after enjoyments, that is. So remember your name, you are that. So strive against it. Strive to retain your freedom. Be a yogi. The result is, we want the result, of course, all of us. Sa sukhi naraha. That fellow is a happy person. We all want to be happy persons. Then the condition is that you want to become a yogi. Practice yoga in life to get happiness in life. So, and for that what you have to do? Resist kama krodhodbhavam vegam. Beautiful, very, you know, pertinent, exact words. The beauty of Bhagavad Gita can be also looked into from just point of view of language. It is exact usage of words is a speciality. Most poetic, most appropriate, most pertinent and strong words are used by Bhagavad Gita. He says there that one has to resist kama krodhodbhavam vegam, the urges arising from passion and anger. They create these urges, vegam. Veg is that urge. That you see something, get tremendously attracted, and just that urge makes you do something. Now you have to learn to resist it, because you get trapped otherwise, you lose freedom. Upon the important tool for that is that we all have been given intellect. We have the power of thinking. Pondering over the past experience is a human speciality. Many neurologists have described this, that a human brain has the special capability of retaining the image of the experience for a longer time. The actual image of the experience is retained for a longer time, and so can ponder over the past experiences and learn from that to alter the behavior. And that is what causes the human progress as against the life of other animals. The other animals, you see, for example, that dogs, they never learned cooking, you see. That how to cook food was human beings maybe 50,000 years back didn't know to cook. But now they know how to cook, they have culinary schools also. So it is all the human development is through this pondering over the experiences. Some animals have that to some extent, but human beings have that to a great extent. And therefore, what we should do? Ponder over the experience. You went to fulfill that drag. That thing dragged you. And what happened after you went there? And with the idea that it will give you a lot of pleasure, it will fulfill you, you just rushed there. And what is the result? Did you get what you wanted? Or you just got pain for nothing? Think about it. If we think about it, and we will easily see that we did a mistake. It promised us something, but it did not deliver. Like the most credit card things and all. They promise you big things, but we don't read that fine printed white on white, as they say. It is provided this and otherwise this. No, 0% APR you can spend. Then it is written underneath, under such and such conditions, subject to terms and conditions. Now those terms and conditions are 5 pages written in such this script that you will end up losing your eyesight if you try to read it. It is. So you just, okay, it's alright. And then you lose your houses, you lose a lot of money because of that. So we see that recent history, it is not too old, you know, it is just still happening with many people, that they didn't read it carefully. And it is not easy to read, but one common sense we all have that those credit card companies are not philanthropic institutions. That we know for sure. They are not there to dole out money to you. So when there is such big promise, one should be careful, you know, that it can't be true. So, it is like that when some object gives you the promise of happiness, you should ponder, has the object happiness itself? No. And so how can it give me? Even if I tell Vishwanath, see, I am giving you a check of $1 million, want to have it? He will smile, Swami, thank you, but I don't want. He knows that the Swami hasn't got anything. How is he going to write a check for $1 million? So, it is like that. So, these urges come in life, and then, although we may be powerless when they actually come in life, but after that at least we should ponder and determine that next time when it comes, I will be vigilant. I will not allow myself to be caught. Maybe again you could not do it, doesn't matter. Again try to impress it on your mind. It is when the urge comes, you are powerless, okay. But later on, you can build your defenses. It is a great saying in the army, and which is very useful for our this spiritual fight also, that it is written there, those armies who sweat more in the peace time, blood less in the war time. Sweat in the peace time so that you will not blood that much in the war time. So when it is peace time, when the urge is actually not kicking you around, when you are still not being compelled, at that time, start building your defenses against it. And what are those defenses? Be in the holy company. You know that certain companies, certain atmospheres, certain places, do not let those temptations come to you so easily. So try to be in that company. The company in our ordinary people's life who are not elevated spiritually to a great extent, company plays a big role. As they say that looking at the, just when you are passing near barber shop, you feel that, well, your hair needs to be done. It is just the influence of the company. Sri Ramakrishna used to say, as soon as you see a lawyer, you think of the court cases. That is the influence of the company. So even when you see the saints, saints means not that that football club, that is, don't worry, because now people, saints means that, you see, it is not related to that. If you see the saints, you get the reflection that, yes, see, this man is so happy, I also want to be happy. How to get happiness? Well, this person should be asked, you know, how to get happiness. You have to ask that who is happy. Why ask somebody who himself is running after happiness? It is you ask somebody who got it, hey, where did you get it? That is what we do in our ordinary life. You ask a person, you found that this person has a nice TV. You then ask, well, where did you get this? Because that fellow has it, you see. So if you see the saints, you will see true happiness that is not dependent on any object. And thus, if you ask them, they will tell you that how to get there. So a holy company is very important. That to remain in holy company naturally brings a lot of that inner qualities in us, because we also have the seeds of that divinity in us. They get that tremendous push by the atmosphere. Like there are different seeds sprout at different times, different seasons. And so, when a particular season comes, those seeds in the ground, they start sprouting. See, the early, these things, when the spring, early spring comes, you immediately know, you see those certain flowers coming up. Which flowers come earliest, John?
Crocus.
So when you see that, you feel that now this summer has come. But then marigold takes lot of time. It comes later, you know. It is a different time for marigold, a different time for that what crocus and yeah. So because the climate matters. So give the right climate for those the seeds that you want to sprout in your life. So if you want saintly qualities to sprout in you, what should be done? Provide that kind of climate, then they will come up. It is therefore very important that whether you come to Vedanta Society or when you are a saintly person, it doesn't matter whether you are in that downtown near some theater or some such thing there in the crowd of that people, or whether you are in a church. At that level it doesn't matter, but for us it matters, because our thoughts are governed many times by the conditions. So the practice is build up that resistance, make life disciplined, that I will do this thing, I will not do this thing. To the extent you have control, exercise it, so that you will gradually go on building more and more. He says that this life is for that. Ihaiva means in this life itself you have to do it, because this is the purpose of life. This life is meant for that. And so if we can do it in this life, then the life is fulfilled. Many Upanishads say this again and again, that human life is meant for this purpose. And if you make good use of it in getting this evolution, wonderful. If not, then you have lost a very precious, very rare opportunity, and things have got just destroyed. You were given a wonderful opportunity. You just passed by it. You neglected it. And so, you won't get it very quickly again. So this life before dying, every moment let us try to think of it and put to this a great purpose of life, to realize truth. Other things, friends, they don't make much of a difference there. Whether you died a rich man or a poor man, doesn't matter. Whether you died as a successful sports person or didn't have any sports in life, doesn't matter. What matters is whether you have learned to resist this desires and the anger, the passion and the anger. If you learn to resist it, then you have made a good use of your life. It is the time is over, but this is a very important discussion, friends. Try to think about it more and more. We shall continue the next few verses. I think next class will be by the grace of God, if God so wishes, inshallah, as the Muslims say, if the Allah wishes, then this would be the next, the last class of this fifth chapter. So, please ponder over this. Any questions? Yes, John? About
resentment.
Yeah.
It's not really, you know, this is from personal experience.
Yeah.
It's not really something that you strive for pleasure. It's just, it's there.
Yeah, exactly.
And I would imagine the way I'm thinking right now, when you start to feel a side effect, something of a pleasure. Let's say pride. And then your pride is hurt. That's the side effect. But you just can't, it's just hard to wish a resentment away or an anger. So how would you say that you can...
Yeah, exactly. You are very correct, because most of us have much more spell of resentment and anger on our minds. We actually had lot of discussion about that in the third chapter about it, that our desires and resentments, they are obverse and reverse really. They are not disconnected from each other. When you have the resentment, really you wanted the things in a different way, and they are not like that, and so there is that resentment. It is seen many times as something that is independent, because it gets converted again into a shortcut that I was telling about. That you don't then consider it as an outcome of a desire, because it has been now put into a shortcut state, and just you resent it. Well, I don't want it. Please don't talk to me about it. That is that resentment. Sometimes the anger is also, it is specially for many these, there was a nice book, I forgot the title, I had read that, about the interviews of those who are in the jail having life sentences, and they had committed heinous acts, did murders and all that. So when in the interview, many of them said that it was just an impulse, I could not resist. That I thought that I must go and kill this fellow. And then that I had to do that. It is, later I know that I did wrong, but I had to do that. It is anger and resentment. In fact, if we ponder on our resentments, we also will learn that it is, it has become a compulsive behavior because of the shortcut formation. There is a desire associated with it, and that not fulfilled becomes resentment. And if we work on it, this problem almost all of us have. In my, about 30 years back, I had a terrible problem like that, and probably I thought I will never get over it. But by proper practice, I have, to some extent, I have a long way to go, but I could see that the progress does take place, that your resentments start waning away. That compulsive aversions and anger that starts going away from your life by properly learning to control both these, anger and aversion, through the practice of yoga. It is very useful in our just day-to-day life also. See how our aversions, our anger, how it hampers us. We know that. If we are angry with some person, then our behavior becomes completely irrational. We just cannot see any good thing in that person. So, This has to be avoided at all costs. So this is very important. Resentments also are like that. In fact, they are more harmful than the desires. Welcome. So let us close with the closing prayers. Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistarayi Ya Swayam Padmanabhasya Mukhapadmadvinisrita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantraha Tasya Namani Yani Karmapyekam Tasya Devasya Seva Shri Krishna Arpanamastu.